So a lot of us in this room, we might be impressed with some great people we see do great things, but something I think that's really amazing that we miss, that we don't appreciate enough, is the timing and the mastery of timing that some people seem to have. You see, there's a lot of things, whether it be a joke or a magic trick, something silly like that, or even something really serious. If it's done at the right time, it's super powerful. Sometimes there's a very thin slice of moment where it's the right words to say or it's the right place to be, right? And I want to start with just a real quick example of someone who's maybe a master at timing. So we go to this first slide here. This is a blast from the past. If you're not into boxing from like the 40s and 50s, this is Rocky Marciano, and he, heavyweight champion of the world, I think from like 1944 to like early 50s, somewhere in there. He's only 5'10", which is my height, which is short, you know, for like a heavyweight champion of the world. Obviously, things continue to adapt and change in boxing world, maybe like everything else, but he is small even at the time, short at the time. And had this weird, like, if you've ever seen him box, instead of, like, taking a step forward with his front foot, he had this, like, shuffle thing, like, with his back foot first. And he would put, like, his whole body into his punches, and he knocked out, like, more than 40 guys, like, out of, like, 50-some fights. He knocked out, like, 44 people or something. I mean, so, like, pretty powerful punch, obviously. I'm sure his timing was spectacular and being able to not just get pummeled himself while he's putting his whole weight into stuff. But the timing thing that I came across this week that I didn't know about him that was really spectacular, something about, you know, all the heavyweight champions of the world have all been spectacular boxers, obviously. But this guy is different than everybody else. Something that people didn't appreciate maybe when he stopped in the 50s that we can appreciate more today, 70 years later, is he's the only heavyweight champion in the world to never lose a fight. He stopped when he was very much on top, and he didn't lose to anybody. And there's something about timing that is impressive there. Most people, even when they reach the top, they stick around for long enough to get beat by somebody else, right? But this guy decided, like, it's time to go when he wasn't, when he was still the best. He decided it was time to go. And if you know your boxing history, there were some really good boxers coming in the 50s and 60s, so might have been a good choice on that. But he's a spectacular. I mean, Muhammad Ali said, like, I don't know if I would have beat him, which anything humble from Muhammad Ali is, like, who was Rocky? You know, like, who was this guy that got any sort of humility out of Muhammad Ali, you know? But most people don't appreciate that about him, right? Timing stuff, knowing like when's the right time to do something, it's very easy for it to go unnoticed. It's very easy even for fans to not notice when someone's really good at doing the right thing at the right time. And as Christians, we're supposed to be putting our focus and adoration on Jesus and our love on Jesus, but there's parts of who Jesus is and what he's capable of that I think go like totally unnoticed to most of us. And today we're going to be looking at just a few verses in John chapter 7, but they're going to be on this idea of like Jesus is certainly a master of timing, like doing the right thing at the right time. And most of us don't pay any attention to that when we're reading the Bible. And then most of us get really frustrated as we go through life because our sense of what should be happening in this moment doesn't fit what Jesus is doing. If you don't pay any attention to how Jesus works timing in the Bible, then you're setting up for bad expectations for how your life and Jesus are going to work out, right? So we're going to be in John chapter 7. If you were here last week, Jesus gets into this heavy discussion with his brothers, his biological brothers, about should he go to this feast or not. And his brothers are like, you want to go be popular, you should go right now and go be a magician, basically, is what they say. And Jesus says, I testify that the world's doing is evil. And so people are going to hate me. And so I got to pick my time right. You know, for you, nobody's going to be against you. You don't have to worry about your timing. But Jesus is saying, the stuff I'm doing is going to come up with so much friction, I have to pick the right time to say what I'm going to say. So he told him he wasn't going to go up with them. But if you look at John chapter 7, starting in verse 10, let's pay attention to Jesus' timing here. Pay attention even, like, is Jesus doing stuff that I would not expect him to do? So verse 10, we start, it says, however, after Jesus' brothers had left for the festival, Jesus went also, not publicly, but in secret. So first, I just want to pause this for a second there at the verse. Normally, we think about Jesus doing something. Do you ever think about Jesus, like, showing up somewhere, you know, in such a way that nobody there knows that it's Jesus? He's showing up in secret, and he doesn't want to be known in that moment to that group of people. A lot of us don't appreciate that about Jesus, of like, in this moment, maybe Jesus doesn't want to be seen by the majority of people in this or that room that you might be in. Like, maybe Jesus is here, maybe he's active, maybe he knows exactly when he's going to do something, but in this moment, he's choosing not to be seen by the majority of people. A lot of us assume if we don't see Jesus, then he either must not be real or he must not care about us, right? Oh, man, you know, like your car breaks down or somebody hurts you or whatever happens, and you think, like, well, if I can't see Jesus, then either he's not around or he doesn't care about me. And that's not true about this passage. He's showing up in secret. Why is he doing that? It says in verse 11, now at the festival, the Jewish leaders were watching for Jesus and asking, where is he? We know from earlier that these guys are literally trying to kill Jesus. So Jesus, there's maybe one reason why Jesus is acting in secret, right? Then it says in verse 12, among the crowds, there was widespread whispering about him. Some said, he is a good man. Others replied, no, he deceives the people. But no one would say anything publicly about him for fear of the Jewish leaders. So there's all this whispering, there's all this buzz around Jesus, but Jesus just lets it sit. How many of you can sit in a room and have people talk about something that's important to you, and you just let the conversation happen, even if people are saying things that are sideways, even if someone else is saying something that's good? How many of us have the self-control to just sit for a moment when something important is being talked about? Most of us, I'm seeing all the head nods of, like, nope, if I care about what's going on, like, no one else even gets to share an opinion. I'm the first to go or something, right? Jesus here for multiple days is around a bunch of people whispering about him. Some are totally off, saying he's evil. And then some are saying this stuff that's maybe like half true about him, right? But every single person who's talking about him is acting out of fear. I don't know if you picked up on that, but they're whispering, right? Because they're afraid of saying anything out loud or publicly about him. So if we say, I love Jesus, I want to follow Jesus, if you want to follow Jesus as we see him in these verses, it means maybe there's going to be something this week where people are going to be talking and where you're just going to be there paying attention to what's being said, but you're not going to be interjecting yourself and correcting everybody. Maybe you're going to be waiting for the right time to speak. And maybe the right time to speak isn't the very, even in that first conversation. You see, when we get to next week, Jesus will get up and talk to this whole crowd. So he's not acting out of fear of, like, oh, I just got to be quiet all the time and I'm going to just be undercover so I don't get killed. Obviously, we know Jesus has the courage to go get killed. But here he's waiting for the right moment. If we're going to go through chapter 7 slow enough, you could miss this. But he's going to have this amazing moment of this, the right time to speak at this moment of the festival, the last day of the festival. It's a big deal. They're doing something with water, and he's going to get up and talk about himself as water. It's an important time. And since he knows that moment's coming, he's able to hold his tongue even when people talk all this craziness around him. If you got somebody in your life, you're like, man, I wish they would change, And maybe you feel like you've tried everything to help that person to change. Have you tried patiently listening and being present and waiting for the right moment when Jesus wants to do something? Because sometimes it's like, I've told them 17 different ways how to fix their life, right? Or I've given up and gotten totally far away from them. But how many of us have like been present and just waited for when's the right time to talk? Here's the other thing, though, that I want to talk to us about with Jesus is some of us are looking for Jesus and we feel like he's in hiding, right? We feel like we've been searching for him and like, where is he? Everybody there was searching for him and almost everybody there couldn't figure out where he was. There's some people that are not mentioned in these verses, but we know from the context were there and did know where Jesus was at. Those are those few disciples that stuck with him at the end of chapter 6. The people that had faith, they actually know where Jesus is when nobody else sees him. The people that might talk a good game and say, Jesus is a good guy, we shouldn't be so hard on him, but they just whisper it because they're living out of fear, those people don't see Jesus either. The ones who have faith enough to follow Jesus, even when they don't understand, those are the ones who see him when nobody else does. I got a chance, Coach Daniel and I got to go with Coach Wayne earlier this week, and we were sitting around drinking some coffee and talking, and Wayne's been in ministry for more than 40 years, and we'll be talking more about Wayne later this month, but he was talking to us about this importance that he's seen in ministry of waiting on God. And I don't have an exact quote from Wayne, but this is what I wrote down in my notes. Wayne said something along the lines of, times of waiting are where most things happen in our relationship with God. I'll read that again. Times of waiting are where most things happen in our relationship with God. So maybe right now you don't know what God wants you to do next, or maybe you just can't wait till you get out of this step-up house, or maybe you just can't wait till whatever the next thing is that's down the road, or till this gets fixed or that gets solved. In this time of waiting, do you have open eyes to say, what is God up to today? What's the right time for Jesus to move? And am I interacting with Jesus and trusting? Because if we read this passage, and if you read it in its fullness, the whole chapter, you see like Jesus is a master at timing this thing out. And if you actually believe, you believe that Jesus knows what he's doing, about when does he say something, when does he show up, then when you don't see him, or there's not as much activity as you want, you can choose to trust him. And Wayne's right. When you choose to trust somebody, when you don't see all the answers, that's the definition of faith. Like, that's how our relationship with Jesus actually grows. I'm going to take you to one more picture, and this is going to be what we wrap up on today. I want to talk to you kind of in depth about this picture of me and my friend. So there's this passage I read this week in Isaiah chapter 41, and if you want to turn there, you can. Isaiah 41, like 7 through 10-ish, is what I'm going to be mentioning about, but verse 7 talks about there's these people who make false gods, and because they're just a hunk of wood or stone, they have to literally like nail them to the ground so they don't fall over, because it's pretty embarrassing if you're praying to something and then like a gust of wind comes and it like falls out his face. Don't want to be there, right? So they have to literally like nail it to the ground. And we might not be following little statues around today and worshiping them, but if you're following something other than Jesus, I bet you've had to prop it up to make yourself not look like a fool at moments, right? You somehow had to say, like, it matters that I'm a Chiefs fan and that's all that I'm living for. Or it matters that I'm living for all this money and that I think money's going to make it better. Or it matters that I'm living for just making my ex-spouse feel horrible. Like, you try to say, like, this really matters. And you'll say stuff to, like, prop it up or stabilize it as a worthwhile reason to live your life. But God goes on to talk to Israel. He says that Israel's his servant, that he's chosen Jacob. And then here's what he says, they're the descendants of Abraham, my friend. When we think about Abraham, he's called the father of faith. What made Abraham and God friends is that Abraham would follow God even when he didn't know the destination. He would pick up and leave all that he knew even when he didn't know the outcome. That's what faith is. It's trusting, right? And what I've been thinking about this week is like that leads to friendship with God. And I was thinking about this relationship I had with Peluche. So that's me on the far right, and that's Peluche on the left. And we're putting on a roof. This is actually the first time I was around a recovery house. It wasn't in Independence. It was, we got to build a little recovery house in Mexico, Peluche and I and a bunch of other people, a whole team of people. And if you think things are rough at the Maple House, like you should see the place that I built, right? You know, it was pretty rough. And you don't want me building your bunk beds, I can tell you. I've done it. And yeah, so it was pretty rough. But we're putting the roof on this thing. Here's what I can tell you about me and Peluche is because we were together almost every single day and we did tons of projects together. We got to tons of situations where I didn't know the answer and Peluche was the type to be full of answers even when he didn't know. But what that led to was I know exactly how much I trust Peluche. I know that if a water pipe bursts and Peluche has a way to fix it, like I'll do whatever he says even if I think it's a very bad idea. Because I trust him more than I trust myself, right? I also know that if Peluche says something about God in front of somebody that I think like, oh, I don't think that's right as far as like God's going to heal this person. I think that's saying too much. I trusted Peluche enough to keep my mouth shut and talk to him privately instead of having an argument in front of other people. Like I trusted enough of like, maybe he's right. I'm not going to just speak against him right away. I trusted Peluche enough that we'd get into all sorts of situations. And if Peluche said, like, this is okay to eat, like, I'd eat it, even if I didn't know what it was. If Peluche said, like, this roof can hold us or whatever, you know, like, I'd get up there. I'd let him drive me around, which he's a pretty crazy driver, you know. I know exactly the things that I would do and I wouldn't do, according to what Peluche would say, because we lived it out. If you hang around Jesus every day, you'll start to learn, like, how much do you really trust him? Because there were certain things that I would tell Peluche no on. And Jesus will feel it out with you, and you'll learn through your actions how much do you really trust him. And what I'm telling you from John 7, maybe it doesn't seem connected, but in John 7, we see, like, Jesus is a master at the timing. And a lot of our stress and a lot of our failure comes because we don't trust his timing. We think that the problem we're facing has to be solved today. Or we think the answer that we need has to come today. And we get into all sorts of problems of doubt because we don't trust that he really knows what he's doing. But Jesus has the freedom to go incognito whenever he wants. And we don't normally think of that. But he has the freedom to be like, I'm not going to show up in a way that people can see me right now because I'm setting something up that's more important. And in your life right now, what Coach Wayne was talking about, when you go through something, you're like, I don't know how this is going to end. If you trust him, then you will be closer friends at the other side of that. Every time that I thought, I don't know how this is going to go, but I'm just going to trust Peluche, our friendship got closer. Every time you don't know how things are going to go and you choose to trust God, your relationship with him will get closer. And I'm telling you today, you can trust his timing. You're facing something today I bet you wish was already solved. And I'm telling you, you can trust that, like, when it's the right time to solve it, he'll solve it. Here's the end of that Isaiah passage. I want to read it to you. Jesus, or God's saying, I've chosen you, not rejected you. Here's what he then says. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. The people that were not able to see Jesus in these verses, whatever they said about Jesus, they all were afraid. And their fear was controlling the volume of their voice. The people who saw Jesus were the ones that had faith. Today, if you'll say, Jesus, I'm going to trust you, not just with my words, but I'm going to trust you with my actions. I'm going to do the right next thing, even though I don't know when you're going to show up, even though I don't know how this is all going to get solved. Because Pelucci, I had to actually get up on the roof with him, right? I had to tie the crazy bike inner tube around a pipe to fix it. You know, like I had to do all this silly stuff. I had to do it. Like if I would have just said, like, Pelucci, you're a great guy, and patted him on the shoulder and not done what he said, like we would not have been friends after a little bit of that, right? Jesus wants you to do something in the midst of your waiting. He wants you to love your enemy, or he wants you to control your body in a way that honors him. He wants you to use your words in a way that loves other people. So I want to pray this Isaiah 41:10 over you guys, because I believe this. I believe God's chosen us, the people of Maywood. He's not rejected us. And I believe he wants us to be his servant so we don't have to be afraid. If you believe that, if you think God's chosen me, if Courtney believes that, if God's chosen me, right? If Rick believes that, like I can be a servant of God. If Ernie believes that, I don't have to be afraid because I've been chosen and I'm called to be a servant. So let's bow our heads. I want to pray this over us. So do not fear, for God will be with you. Do not be dismayed, for God is our God. He will strengthen us and help us. God will uphold us with his righteous right hand. Jesus, thank you for choosing us. It's in your name we pray, Jesus. Amen.